Colin Oates and You Make My Dreams on Kildare's KFM. And of course, if you like music like that, don't forget to join Thomas Marr this afternoon between 3 and 4 o'clock on K Drive Classic Gold, playing great music from the 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s. Now, some creches, we believe, are restricting entry for children for 14 days if they have been abroad. This news came yesterday, and joining me to discuss this is Chair of the Federation of Early Childcare Providers, Elaine Dunn. Elaine, a very good morning to you.
Hi, good morning, Owen. How are you?
I'm not too bad. This news, like I said yesterday, it would have caused a little bit of concern for some parents who maybe had holidays planned. They've received their vaccinations, gone abroad. Obviously, the children wouldn't have been vaccinated, but then they were hit with the news that when they come back, they'll essentially have to quarantine their children from the creche for 14 days.
Yes, this is correct. And the reason we're doing this is because within the services, we are responsible for a lot more families than just one. And so we're looking after the health, safety and well-being of everybody within the services. We have seen the cases in the new Delta variant. Literally yesterday it was 1,378. We now know that a lot of children are getting it. We know of services up the country who have creches that specifically look after under twos, and we know that these services have been closed down because the variant is in those services. We know children in those services have been pretty sick. So everything that we're doing is to maintain the health, safety and well-being for everybody within the service and to stop the service from closing down. Because if you think about it, if a child and the family go off on a holiday, and we all know there's the kids' club, the swimming pool, and they're having great fun and they're mingling with everybody, and then they get off the plane, they come back here, and they come straight into us the next day, and then 5 days later, they're shown symptoms of COVID. That's our services closed down. That's it. Like, the pods are gone, and you don't know how many people are going to get infected. So it puts a lot of families out there that have to have their children tested and everything else. So all we're trying to do at this time is be cautious and see where it goes.
Just to be clear, Elaine, this is not a directive. You haven't been told that you have to do this. Childcare providers are taking it upon themselves.
We are taking it upon ourselves because we have, as I said, we are responsible for what goes on inside of our services. So each service has their own policies and procedures that they adhere to. So if you look at the last year, we've actually done really, really well in keeping everybody safe and well within the sector. And now literally we're told, put your policies aside and open up your doors. So these are the guidelines. And we have to remember that these are government guidelines. They're not statutory. So therefore we are doing everything we can to look after everybody.
Do we have an estimation of the percentage of childcare providers who will be implementing this policy, or are we going to see inconsistencies in terms of you could have one childcare facility in a particular town that is not taking children in if they've been abroad for 14 days, while others are going to allow the children to come in the next day?
What we're seeing within our own membership of 1,600 is that this is, you know, a lot of providers are feeling the same, that they all want to implement that, you know, the child does not come back in without being tested before they come back in. And that's being fair to everybody. That's being fair to the families that are within the service. Like, if you have a child that comes in, they can affect up to, if you've got a service with 28 children, that potentially could put 28 families at risk.
Well, just to pick up on that point then, if a child comes back and gets tested and is negative, are they allowed back into the creche, or do they still have to stay out for 14 days?
No. If they get tested after 5 days and they're negative, then they can come back into the service.
Okay.
And I think that we're being very fair on that, you know, because at this point, we don't want to lose our policies and procedures. They're to suit each service type. So our policies and procedures are very specific. And this one, nearly all of us, I would say, have the same policy regarding the COVID. And it has worked since the 29th of June last year. Why would we change something that's actually working? I mean, we have policies for the vomiting bug as well, and different types of bugs that are out there. And, you know, if there's a vomiting bug in, the child has to stay home for 48 hours after they vomit. That's our policy. Like, we, you know, that is our business. And our business is to keep everybody within the doors safe and well.
I don't think anybody would disagree with the reasoning behind it, because ultimately public health and safety is paramount. That's the most important thing. Mm-hmm. What some people might argue is that it's not only going to affect obviously the child within the creche, but also you know, childcare for the parents is going to be out the window then for 2 weeks.
Unfortunately, yes, that is correct. But you're also stopping a whole service from being closed down, and maybe 40 or 50 families from being affected by us being closed down completely. So by having the effect on one family, you may be saving 40. So, you know, where do we go? And the other thing that we need to be mindful of, Dr. Tony Houlihan, he said caution needs to be exercised. The Delta transition among children is quite high at the moment. He has advised parents that it is safer not to bring children into indoor dining settings. This is a responsible public health advice. So why is it okay then for us to take a child who's been on a two-week holiday with a parent and they get off a flight and then they're allowed to come into us? There's no logic in it.
What about fees, Elaine, in terms of that, if a child has been taken abroad on holidays with their parents and they come back and they have to stay at home then for the 2 weeks, will the parents still be charged for those 2 weeks even though essentially the providers won't be providing the care?
Every service has a different fee policy, so it all depends on their fee policy.
And
so that's what I can't answer. That is between the parent and the provider.
And have parents been notified by providers in the general scheme of things of this policy?
This has only happened, this policy has always been in place. Okay, since last year this policy has been in place for services. So it's not a new policy. We're just not changing our policies to say that they can come in after flight. So parents are very, very aware. Services, we are being as transparent as we possibly can. Like, we're always updating policies and procedures within the services and parents will be notified of that. But this policy is the same policy that has been in place since 29th June last year.
Okay. That's the chair of the Federation of Early Childcare Providers, Elaine Dunn. Elaine, just before we let you go,
yeah.
Obviously we've had you on the programme previously. It's been a very tough year and a half for you know, people in childcare settings. You had your doors closed for quite a while, but since reopening, how have you found it generally?
I find it very positive. I think everything is going very, very well for the sector at this time. So, yeah, we seem to be doing quite well. And we are keeping COVID out because we had seen the COVID numbers dropping, and then all of a sudden in the last few weeks it started to come up again within services. So that's what's worrying us, and that's why we've stepped up with this policy again.
Okay, many thanks for joining us on the programme this morning, Elaine, and good morning to you. Would love to hear your thoughts on that by text or WhatsApp 0833 97 97 97. Some creches are restricting entry for children for 14 days if they have been abroad, and obviously, as Elaine clarified there, if they do come back and they get tested for COVID-19 and they receive a negative test, then they'll be allowed back in to the childcare settings. I think people will have differing views. Some will say, well, look, why are you taking your children abroad on a holiday in the first place if they haven't been vaccinated? Indeed, one listener had said, I can't believe the people are so stupid as to take their unvaccinated children on foreign holidays. While another one here says, I think that woman is right. If I had a child, I'd want it in her creche. She's thinking of other people. It's a pity more people don't take her lead. So, as I said, get in touch with us and let us know in regards to that. But moving back to the local issues then, and Mark Lee is a Labour councillor on the Athy Municipal District. Mark, good morning.
Morning, Owen. Hope you're enjoying this lovely weather.
I hope you are too, Mark, and that it's nice and sunny down around the south of the county. Now, the meeting took place of the Athy Municipal District over the last couple of days, and the first motion that you put down was you wanted the council to commit to adding the Fort Barrington Road from Ardroo Meadows to the border with County Laois to the roads programme in 2022, including placing traffic calming measures on both sides of the entrance of Ardroo Drive. So just explain that to us for listeners who are not from the area.
Fort Barrington Road, Owen, is more colloquially known as probably the Barrow House Road. Barrow House is a little village in Laois, but they all go to school and stuff in Athy and work and whatever. So that road is used, but there's been no meaningful work been done on that road since 2014, Owen, when the Town Council went away there. Kildare County Council would have took over that road, and there's no record of any meaningful work except a bit of patching for various councillors to fill potholes and stuff. What I have asked is, it's to be considered for inclusion in the roads programme for 2022 to get the road resurfacing up to standard. And thankfully, the council have agreed to it. Now, on the safety assessments, the safety in regards to Ardrew Drive, there will be an assessment done by Kildare Traffic Management to check that. And I am aware my colleague, Councillor Aoife Breslin, had a motion up last month on the realignment of that junction. So maybe that is something that can be looked at as well there, Owen. Pleased to say that it's moving and going in the right direction.
Okay, you also wanted the council to stop cars exiting Green Alley onto Duke Street. That is to make sure that it's a one-way street allowing entry only from Duke Street towards the Garda station.
Yeah, well, that lane is on the top of Duke Street as you're heading out to Kilkenny Road. It's opposite the Strabally Junction, the Strabally Road Junction of Woodstock Street. It's quite a busy place there. There's a yellow box. Anyone that's coming out of that junction has or turning right back down Duke Street has to come out onto the yellow box, and it really is awkward. And then I have reports from a local shopkeeper there that's telling me that people swinging in there are meeting a car, and there's basically nowhere to go as such. It is only designed, well, it's probably never designed for a car, but there is only room for one car. And what I'm asking the council to do is make it a one-way system. We have had successful one-way systems in the last a few years brought in St. John's Lane, Chapel Lane, Meeting Lane there, and I can't see any reason why this one can't be done either.
Okay, and finally, Mark, you had a motion down then as well, which was similar to Vera Louise Behan, who we had on the programme earlier on this morning, but just to see the response that you got to your motion, asking if the council could outline its plans to have wheelchair swings in all parks in the Athy Municipal District.
Yeah, and in fairness to the Parks Department, they got back to me to say that they have basket swings and Jeff Hyter swings. Now, I don't know what they are, but I'm sure they are the right thing. And I've got back to the County Kildare Access Network on. I got onto them last week and just asked them when I got the motion report there, is everything been said there? Was it what they agreed with, and they do agree with it. Now, however, there may be a case for a full wheelchair swing, which is a big, lumbersome, expensive piece of equipment, and it is like there is 50,000 to be spent on Pepys Park in the Athy next year. We may look at it then, Owen.
Okay, Labour Councillor on the Athy Municipal District, Mark Lee. Thanks for that, Mark. Good morning to you. To say a happy 60th birthday to Johnny Doyle, the award-winning Curragh postman and Moorfield senior football team member. That comes in from his wife Bernie and son Glenn, and we're told he won a community award for all his hard work during the pandemic, and everyone is so proud of him. So Johnny Doyle out there in the Moorfield area, happy 60th birthday to you, and you're very famous, we're told, as well as the award-winning Curragh postman. So hopefully you have a great day and that you're enjoying the sunshine. Now, as you heard in our headlines with Kira there at 10 o'clock, two politicians and two hoteliers are due to appear before a court in Clifton this morning in connection with the alleged breach of COVID-19 regulations. They received summonses earlier this year after the DPP decided to bring charges arising from an investigation into the organisation of an Oireachtas Golf Society dinner last summer. Our court's correspondent Frank Graney has more.
The controversial dinner took place in the Station House Hotel in Clifton, County Galway, on August 19th last, following a two-day golfing event hosted by the Oireachtas Golf Society. Golfers competed for the President's Prize earlier that day, while the Captain's Prize was contested the day before. At the time, Galway West TD Noel Grealish was the captain, while former Fianna Fáil TD and Senator Donie Cassidy was the Society's president. Both are due before Clifton District Court later this morning, charged with an alleged breach of the legislation underpinning the laws to control the spread of COVID-19. Local businessman and developer of the Station House Hotel, John Sweeney, is also on the court's list. So too is his son, James, who is the hotel's general manager.
Yeah, we'll have much more on that throughout the course of the day on our news bulletins and reports from Frank as well. Kira.
Today is World Brain Day, and there's a new report just being launched about 25 minutes ago from the Neurological Alliance of Ireland. It's called Looking Beyond COVID-19, Embracing Digital Solutions to Neurological Care. And joining us this morning to discuss it is the Executive Director, Magdalene Rogers. Good morning, Magdalene.
Good morning, Ciarán. Thanks for the opportunity to talk to your listeners today on World Brain Day.
I know we really appreciate you coming on. And I guess this is the beginning of learning from COVID, isn't it? And what we can do to change different sectors, but especially our health sector.
Absolutely, Ciarán. And I suppose at the moment, it's hard to think of a life really beyond COVID. But I suppose, you know, at some stage we will get there and our health services are returning to some sort of normal. But what this report is really saying is that of all the, I suppose, of all the bad news and all of the restrictions that happen to people, one of the things, I suppose, that is almost in some ways a good news story is the opportunities that arose for changes in how people get their health care. And the report that we're launching today just tries to document some of that and, most importantly, what patients thought of all this and what they need going forward.
Now, it's a 44-page report, Magdalene, but just some of the basic findings that the Alliance reported was 75% of service users surveyed would use online services into the future. Is this better for people who do have different neurological disorders to have the ability to meet online instead of having to meet face-to-face all the time?
Well, it's fascinating, Ciarán. It was a mixed picture. So for people that were using online services, and it's important to point out that up to 50%, some organisations saying up to 50% of their client base, they felt they couldn't reach through online services for whatever reason. For people who were accessing healthcare online, some of the aspects of their care, they really wanted face-to-face. So, for example, a lot of people wanted to meet their consultant face-to-face. For other people, then, things like a talk about their condition, how to manage their symptoms, they would have had to travel to that. They would have had to, you know, maybe the talk was in Dublin and they're based down the country. So for them, it's so much easier. They're sitting in their kitchen, they're sitting with their laptop or the computer, and they can get that. They can just open their laptop and they're there. And I suppose for some people, services that we mightn't have thought could be provided online, like physiotherapy, for example, sometimes worked really well. Like some of the providers we talked to, they said people were much more comfortable with this. They were in their own homes. They maybe had somebody to help them with some of the exercises. So we really found COVID forced people to think very differently about how they got their health services. And we do need to know a lot more. We need to ask patients directly instead of making up our minds for them. That's really the core message of this report.
But it seems the report, the crux of it, it's really about the patient's voice, Magdalene.
It is. And we say that so often, but this is a real case where this is so important. We can't make assumptions. And I think throughout the report, people came back all the time. Providers came back to us saying people did make assumptions. Clinicians, organisations made assumptions that people wouldn't be interested or they wouldn't come online. And they very much did. And the message coming out from the survey that we did was that people will continue to do this and see themselves doing this after COVID. So I think the really central message of our report is we can't, without talking to patients, without getting their views about what works and what doesn't work for them, we shouldn't be planning this going forward without their voice.
So the majority of those surveyed did say that they would like to have a combination of face-to-face and online services going forward. But in terms of broadband, we know it's an issue here in parts of County Kildare. What did service users say about their own broadband and obviously then getting access to the services?
And that was one of the main challenges, Ciarán, that actually came out. In terms of the challenges people identified, broadband access was the major one. We also have that concern about people who aren't accessing online services. They're almost an unknown because we don't know, we don't understand what is it about online health. Is it broadband access? Is it, you know, maybe unfamiliarity with technology? And rather than almost discounting those people and saying, oh, look, they're not going to, you know, they're not going to want this, they're not going to engage this, we do need to reach those people. And we have examples from some of the organisations, as you know, some of their clients a little bit reluctant at the start, but once they were given a little bit of support, and I think anyone who wants to should be able to access their care online if they want, if that is their choice, and they should be facilitated to do that. And broadband access is a huge part of that.
Yeah, and it was very interesting to read about the organisations that are providing online services. Three questions were asked, or three answers could be given, I should say, to a question asked. And 0% of organisations said that they do not currently provide online services. So we really are living in the 21st century in terms of that. But if you look at the breakdown, Magdalene, for service users' preferences for future care, they said face-to-face, 87% would want an appointment with their neurologist face-to-face. 60% said that they'd want the appointment with the specialist nurse face-to-face. Appointment with the GP is 86%. Support groups for people with the condition that this individual may have is 34% would want to see people face-to-face. Could that potentially be something to do with social issues around their neurological disorder? Because I would, just looking at it from the outside, think that maybe speaking to people face-to-face who, I guess, live with the same condition as you do may be comforting on some level.
Absolutely. And I think that's it, really, one of the messages of this report here is we need to know more. We need to know, I mean, we just asked that question. Like you, I would have thought people would like that face-to-face with other people. It may be easier to share. When people have that sense of a little bit of distance, they might find it easier to open up online. It may be a travel issue that, you know, some of the support groups are maybe in the evening and it's difficult for them to get transport or go to these support groups. There could be a variety of reasons. And I suppose the real thing is, rather than making assumptions and providers making assumptions, we have to really speak directly to patients themselves and give them real choices about how their care is delivered. As I say, this has opened up a whole avenue of potential for people. And we had anecdotally comments in the survey of people saying, you know, I used to have to travel halfway around the country and now I can just open up a laptop in my kitchen and I feel much more empowered and I feel more able to remember my questions because I haven't sat in a busy waiting room. So there are all sorts of potential here, but I think there is really, what we're saying is there is a lot more needs to be understood about this area.
Organisations, Magdalene, how did they respond to the report findings?
Well, I suppose one of the things that comes across in the report is it's not just the organisations. What we found was across the board in neurological care services, and that includes HSE-provided services. Everybody stepped up to the mark, and that's one of the things that's acknowledged in the foreword of the report by Professor Martin Curley, who's the head of Digital Transformation at HSE. He said that he just recognised that whether it was clinical services, whether it was patient organisations, everybody stepped up. And I think what delighted really the providers is they can all see themselves in the report. They can all see whether it was a clinician in a hospital. They all had very similar experiences. They all faced very similar challenges. And what you can see in the report is they all responded in similar ways to the needs of people. A lot of them worked together as well. We found evidence of fantastic partnerships between clinicians and organisations where, you know, delivering webinars, delivering physiotherapy online. So really it brought together the sector in that way. I suppose that people with neurological conditions themselves were very much involved in how their services were designed and delivered to them, because they really voted with their feet or with their laptops. They engaged with these services when they became available online.
Well, Magdalene Rogers, the Executive Director of the Neurological Alliance of Ireland, thank you so much for joining us. And of course, the full report is available on the Neurological Alliance Ireland website.
Thanks a million, Ciara. That's www.nai.ie.
Yeah, thanks to Magdalene Rogers for joining us on the programme. www.nai.ie is the website there to get more information on it. Now, Minister Heather Humphreys, TD, published a plan to maximise the economic impact of the Barrow Blue Way earlier on this morning. This was done in conjunction with County Kildare Leader Partnership Chairperson Colm O'Gogan, Kildare County Council Chief Executive Peter Carey, and Director of Marketing and Development with Waterways Ireland, Andrew Nixon King. To discuss this, Martin Hayden is Fine Gael TD for Kildare South and also Minister of State at the Department of Agriculture, Food and the Marine. Martin, welcome to the programme again. Good morning.
Thanks very much, Owen. And the launch is actually happening now at 11 o'clock, so we're ahead of the game.
Yeah. We're ahead of the game, right, OK. And I'm sure people can log on and get more details of the launch itself. But just talk to me, Martin, about the aim of the plan then and the purpose of this economic impact plan that's been launched.
Yeah, absolutely. So, look, we know now, we're becoming familiar with the Barrow Blue Way project, which is a really fantastic initiative that is developing the towpath along the Barrow line of the Grand Canal from Motown and Robertstown down to Latangan, Monasterevin, Vicarstown, and into Atai. And it's a 46-kilometre path that is being developed for both use for leisure, for walk, for cycles, but also for water-based activities as well. It's your funding of $6.8 million, which was $5 million from Michael Ring at the time, the Rural Regeneration and Development Fund, and then $1.7 million from the Department of Housing at that time. And really what today's economic plan launch is about the work that has been undertaken by County Kildare Leader Partnership, Kildare County Council, Waterways Ireland, Kildare Local Enterprise Office, as well as private, community and voluntary sectors all coming together to identify, to do some mapping as to what the Barrow Blue Way blueprint will look like. That's basically to say what is here and what is coming. And what else can be done to activate the Blue Way, because it's halfway under development now. It's been opened in phases, but it won't be fully finished until early next year. And with it come huge economic opportunities for people who live along that area or close by to develop new business opportunities and to maximise the potential of this, because we estimate in the first year that this Blue Way could get 40,000 additional visitors to our area. And with that comes great opportunity for people to set up new businesses or for existing businesses to benefit from that.
Essentially, Martin, it's to highlight really what can be done with the Blue Way after, when it's finished. And you're saying there that it gives opportunities for businesses and communities to set up along the Blue Way at various different points over the 46 kilometres.
Yeah, exactly. So what we estimate, and what's estimated out of this plan, is that in the first year, 40,000 visitors additional will come to the area, and that they will spend create economic activity worth about €3.5 million for the local economy. So what this plan is about is focusing people's mind on who's coming, what services they'll require, and what opportunities that gives for local people and local businesses to benefit from that, but also to make sure that those visitors and people who use it have a really, really good experience and want to come back. The things that the expenditure will be on could be hotels, cafes, restaurants, bars, tourist attractions, and various services in the towns and surrounding areas along the route. But to develop all of these opportunities and to maximise a return for a part of Kildare that could really do with this boost in economic activity, it does involve a coordinated approach, and we need all the main stakeholders working together, and that's what this plan was about. To set up these businesses and stuff, there needs to be ongoing engagement from a planning perspective and all the different agencies, infrastructure development, traffic management, motivation and encouragement for businesses and entrepreneurs with startup ideas, the sports and community development side of things as well, and enterprise development and funding support. So it's about bringing all those together in one place, and that's what this economic plan today is about. And for people who want to see it, local businesses are encouraged to review the economic plan on the County Kildare Leader website, and it'll be a great resource and source of information and guidance for businesses as well.
I see as well here, Martin, just reading that developing a high quality international visitor experience on the Barrow Blue Way requires investment from the public and private sector in terms of basic infrastructure and services such as public transport, public toilets, signage and parking. Now, you mentioned the funding that came from Michael Ring, who was the minister at the time, and the other $1.7 million as well through, was it the housing grant?
Department of Housing, yeah.
The Department of Housing, yeah. So does that cover that, or are we looking for more investment here and more funding?
So what that covers is the development of the Blue Way, and there's an element of build it and they'll come, and what this plan is about is saying this facility is going to be completely open early next year, and we're going to have all of these visitors next year, and these are the different things that they will be looking for and that they would be willing to spend money on, and we will learn from other Greenways and Blueways experiences as well. And it's about making sure that we provide all those facilities for them, that there's cafes along the way, that there's bicycle shops to repair punctures, that there's opportunities for glamping and accommodation and all those different things that there are, as well as restaurants and everything else. There'll be innovative ideas that we haven't even thought of yet around water-based activities and the like.
So how is that funded?
Well, this is about, let's say, an entrepreneur lives nearby there or maybe has land that touches on the Blue Way, and they're thinking, well, how can I maybe have a business opportunity here? So some of that and there are supports for new businesses as they're starting up, and for their local enterprise office, Jackie McNabb and the team there are a great resource for new businesses. Some of that will be people taking the opportunity and will fund it themselves because they'll be making a business out of it. But in the public infrastructure you talk about, there will be a role for us to look at, to identify where there are needs, and that's where Kildare County Council and Laois County Council have a role to play, and for the facilities like that you talked about, where they need to be developed, you know, we'll look at other funding streams like local property tax and different elements as these elements come about.
And in particular, Martin, because I mentioned it there as well, like public toilet signage, etc., but public transport is going to be massive, I would imagine, in terms of getting people to and from the Blue Way who perhaps don't drive, because, you know, Lowtown, Rathangan, Monastrevin, Robertstown, those kind of areas wouldn't have the highest level of public transport, and I mean that with the greatest of respect. So there are going to have to be new routes designed, I'm sure.
Absolutely, and I would think Alan Kerry and the team in Local Link, particularly their Local Link, have a great opportunity there as well. And this is what this plan is about, Owen. It's about identifying the opportunities and the deficits and seeing, like, these will be good problems that will be caused, these levels of demand, and it's about identifying how can we provide those type of connection points there. And, like, you know, this in time will connect with the bigger greenway will be going through the north of the county. It'll also, hopefully, if we can, and I'm working very hard that we get Waterways Ireland to revisit the lower part south of the tie of the planned Blue Way, because this was planned to be twice as long to go down to St. Wollaston parallel, but that part didn't get planning permission. So I'm hopeful that will be revisited, and I think that would be a benefit to a tie in Monastrevin and Rathangan and Lowtown along the way as well. But where there are those challenges around transport and their links, this plan is about identifying those, and we still have that bit of time now to identify where those needs and demands will be and to respond accordingly.
Well, the launch is taking place at 11 o'clock this morning. I'm sure more information will become publicly available after that as well. But for the moment, Fine Gael TD for Kildare South, Junior Minister for Agriculture as well, Martin Hayden. Thanks for that, Martin.
Could I just highlight one quick thing?
Very briefly, yeah.
My colleague, Minister Heather Humphreys, this morning also announced €8.8 million funding for the National Hub Network, which is a key part of the rural future plan as well. And that's involved €275,000 worth of funding for Kildare. So Venture House in Crookstown is getting €49,000. The Hub at Market Square in Ballymore Eustace and the Osprey Business Centre getting €75,000 each. County Kildare Chamber, iHub, is getting €34,000. And ACDEL, Allenwood Community Development Association, are getting €30,000 towards remote working spaces and improving those. And this is really part of our role about facilitating people who want to work in their local communities and reducing that commute. So another really good news story for rural parts of South Kildare.
Okay, great stuff, Martin. Thanks for that. Good morning.
Very welcome back. We're going to now head to the Kildare Newbridge Municipal District, and I'm joined on the line by Fianna Fáil Councillor Anne Connolly. Good morning, Anne.
Good morning. How are you this morning?
Very good. I'm appreciating the weather, and I hope you are too.
Absolutely. It's just amazing. Long may it last.
I know. Unfortunately, I don't think it's going to last long, Anne. So
I know. Don't burst the bubble just yet now. Just yet.
Well, you know, at least we'll be getting the good night's sleep now that we won't be roasting in bed at night when the weather does turn.
We're not used to this, but you look at it. We'll enjoy it while we can.
We absolutely will.
Yeah.
Listen, I'm going to start off with a motion all Kildare Newbridge councillors brought to the council that in recognition of the lives that were lost during the pandemic and in relation to the pandemic, a memorial bench to be installed and located in an appropriate location. Did the council come to some sort of agreement as to where this would be at?
I'll tell you what, the general discussion on it then, not so much a bench. Now we're looking at, in conjunction with Tidy Towns, that a tree would be planted in each of the towns and possibly to be investigated, a plaque of some description put with them, but it will be in conjunction with Tidy Towns finding a suitable location. That's the general consensus from that particular motion, yes.
And Anne, we were just speaking with Minister Martin Hayden there in regards to the Blue Way, and you actually have a question for the council in terms of the Blue Way about toilet facilities and water points along the Blue Way here in Kildare Newbridge.
Yes, absolutely. And we're hoping that it'll be into a tanga now in September. Yes, and the steering group are meeting now next week or in the next couple of weeks on this, and all of that will come up in the conversation, and looking at the possibilities. Now, I get the rationale that they would like toilet facilities to be provided, say, in the towns. That's to take the people into the towns and buy their ice creams or have their lunches or whatever it is. Now, I'm of the opinion that they will need something else along the route as well, like, you know, because, you know, 5 or 6 kilometres, you know, people might need to go to the toilet and they may need a toilet facility. But this steering group now are looking at all of this, you know, and will be looking at all of this at the next meeting, yeah.
Okay, and Anne, you're asking about a sharp bend in Milltown. It's at Christianstown.
Just
remind listeners where exactly that bend is.
Now, if you're coming into, we'll say, Christianstown from the Rattangan end, you know, you'll come into this very sharp bend, and there's quite a number of houses around there. I suppose we have a bit of speed involved here as well, and then the sharp bend, a couple of, I think, residents there had their fences mowed out of it. So they're looking for the council to make safe at that bend, and probably signages and a bit of traffic calming. So we are hoping, both myself and Councillor Mark Stafford, who had something similar in, to meet with the engineer, look the area engineer on site now, and see what we can come up with solve that problem at that particular area.
And just finally, you asked the council to receive confirmation from Minister Noonan's office that windows and doors would be included in the retrofitting programme under the Just Transition programme. What did the council have in response
to that? Yeah, they haven't received anything as of yet. But I am of the belief and have been told, because Minister Noonan has committed to including the windows and to include the windows and the door in the retrofitting programme. Like, I mean, the council were told they were only allowed to spend, I think, 27,000 on each house for this retrofitting programme. And with that, they wouldn't be able to include the windows and doors, which I felt was, you know, wrong. Like, I mean, to do that, and a lot of these houses need windows and doors badly, you know. So, our Senator Fiona Loughlin put a question to Minister Noonan on this and the floor of the Senate, and he has stated that he will include, that he will be for contacting Kildare County Council, and that they are to include the windows and doors in the retrofitting programme. So that's very positive.
Well, Councillor Anne Connolly, you finish what you're saying there, Anne.
No, but as I said, that is very positive, and look, hopefully now he will be onto them in the not-too-distant future.
Fianna Fáil Councillor Anne Connolly of Kildare Newbridge Municipal District, I hope you enjoy the weather today.
Thank you very much, Nancy. Bye-bye.
Yeah, thanks, Anne, and thanks to Ciara as well. I think just because the weather is not going to stay with us for too much longer, unfortunately, we'll finish up with another summer song on the programme. And I played this on Saturday Sports Beat, just gone by. And before we play the song, have a listen to this. It's taken from a movie, and I'm sure it'll dust off the cobwebs in the brain and make you remember this movie as well, from the 70s, I think.
Hey, look up.
I got a surprise for you.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Sandy!
Danny?
What are you doing here? I thought you were going back to Australia.
We had a change of plan.
I can't... Well, that's cool, baby. I mean, you know how it is. Rocking and rolling and whatnot.
Danny?
That's my name. Don't wear it out.
What's the matter with you?
What's the matter with me, baby? What's the matter with you?
Yeah. What happened to the Danny Zuko I met at the beach?
Well, I do not know. I mean, maybe maybe there's two of us, right? Why don't you take out a missing persons ad or try the yellow pages? I don't know.
You're a fake and a phony, and I wish I'd never laid eyes on you.
Whoa.